Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. Today, we are talking to Anna Lucas. Welcome, Anna, to Zero Hour, and thanks for joining us. Before we jump into this, I just want to give a little bit of background because I'm usually terrible at it. I usually just, because the people I talk to are so fascinating, I just all of a sudden get into conversation and people will say, God, I can show with that person. Who was that person? So Anna was born in England in 1970 and lives and works in London. Her education is a BA in Fine Arts in Sculpture. Did I read that right? Yes. Okay. From Sheffield, is it Hallam University?
Yes.
In the UK. And then the HND Art Foundation, Bath College of Art in the UK. What does HND stand for?
It's like the foundation course that we
do.
When you've graduated from A-levels, when you're 18, and then you do 1 year of all the different arts disciplines before you specialise.
Yeah. I mean, Britain is
HND
very...
HND is Higher National Diploma.
Okay. But
we normally don't talk about that.
You don't talk about it?
Much.
No? Okay. All right.
It was a good one, though. It was a very good one.
It was a good one. Yeah. Okay, good. Currently, you're doing a residency at the Ruskin School. And tell me about that.
Okay, so it's the Ruskin School of Fine Art.
Right.
Coupled with the School of Physiology, Genetics, and Anatomy at Oxford University.
And then as far as awards, among others, the one I knew our listeners would probably be most familiar with was the Henry Moore Sculpture Fellowship, Spike Island. Okay, so this biomedical school... let me see if I've got this right. And so you graduated in sculpture.
Yes.
You're currently a filmmaker.
Yes.
And you're working at the Ruskin School at Oxford University at doing
doing some drawings.
All right. So what we're getting at here, folks, is this woman has a very interesting life. So listen hard, okay? So tell me about that. What is that?
So for 2 years, I've been drawing from every DVD that I watched. I've drawn continuously for the two hours, the duration of the movie, by putting a sheet of carbon paper over a sheet of regular white paper.
Right.
And then putting on the DVD and drawing continuously. So at the end of it, I end up with this incredibly disintegrated mass of tangled marks that's like a manifestation of those 2 hours.
What's the DVD of?
Any of the DVDs that I take out. In theory, this was all for relaxation, but obviously now it's become part of my practice.
That's kind of the way I've tried to do my life, too, but it hasn't worked out very well. The whole thing was about relaxation, but it just hasn't... I haven't been able to figure it out yet. As they card him off. All right, so there you are. You've got a piece of carbon paper. You've got white paper.
Mm-hmm.
And you're drawing medical images? You're drawing images of the body?
So the two years ago, I started drawing any DVDs. And then I was invited
more recently.
It was
this is a peculiar thing.
It was to do with the fact that when I'm making my own movies, and I'm so in the quagmire of editing, and I need to get distance from what I'm doing.
Right.
And sometimes I would get a sheet of paper and just start drawing what I've filmed in order to try and understand it again.
Right.
Or I would write a script saying, okay, Bedouin lady walks in from left to right, like a script so that I can distance myself.
Do I want this in? Do I want this out? Does this make sense here?
Yeah, what am I looking at?
What
would be the audience? What is the audience seeing?
So that's got to be the toughest part. I mean, you not only film it, you edit it.
Yeah.
That's got to be really hard. Yeah, okay.
So,
because it's all good, right?
Definitely not. I do. You know, some documentary makers shoot 1:25 ratio or something. That means 25 get stitched. I shoot quite a low ratio, actually.
Do you?
I don't have to go through quite so much.
But how does that turn into a residency? I mean, is someone actually supporting this effort?
So what then happened is I was invited to make an application to the Ruskin School of Drawing for this connected project with the School of Biomedical. And actually, I was really in a hurry, and I'd just come back from Peru, and I didn't know what I was going to present to them. And I just hit on, what do I want to do this winter? You know what? I'd really like to just draw movies.
Yeah,
that would be cozy and quiet. Anyway, so they've given me the residency, and essentially what I proposed to do was to look at a Werner Herzog movie, which is called Land of Silence and Darkness. And I was interested in how that could be translated into a scientific and neurological perception-based exploration, and that I'm drawing these things blind. My drawings are called blind movie drawings because I can't see what I'm drawing.
Oh, I guess not.
Because the
of
carbon
course not.
Paper's on there. Right, and also because it's a dark space.
Right.
So at the moment, the residency's just begun, and basically what I'm doing
How dark a space? Are you working in the dark?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm.
Wow.
Because there's no point. It was also
I mean, there's no point to have the lights on if you're on carbon paper.
Yeah, I can't see what I'm doing. But also the point was that I hadn't drawn for a long, long time. So you become an artist because you're good at drawing at school or something like that. Then I've become a filmmaker, and I was really missing the directness of drawing versus always mediating everything I see through the camera.
Right, exactly.
So it partly came from that. So now I'm sitting in an old dissection theatre, a 1920s beautiful wooden desk with a projector, projecting Werner Herzog's film, looped, and drawing it, and I'm able to draw on a bigger scale. And then I'm starting to talk to the scientists.
I think we need to make a film about that. I think there's a film there.
I do really want... Actually, what I want to do... If Werner Herzog
Do you mind if I come by and film you doing this? I think there's a bigger... This might work.
But yeah, if Werner Herzog's listening or anyone knows him, I want him to come, and I want him to come and draw with me.
Okay. So, all right, Werner.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's fascinating. So that just sort of gives us a little tip of the iceberg of the kind of life and the kinds of opportunities that you have that are so part of the show is you know that comparison between the opportunities that if you're willing to step away from the conventional life, you know, which a lot of us aren't. But if you're willing to step away from it, you really have an opportunity to explore the things that most fascinate you, as opposed to many of us have to experience our day of tolerating the things that don't fascinate us too much. And it was interesting you said, you know, I was thinking, you know, what did I want to do this winter? What was I going to, you know? And I thought that it would be sort of wonderful and sort of peaceful and quiet to be able to do this. And how many people have that opportunity, really?
Yeah,
I mean, really.
It's incredible privilege.
Yeah.
Really is.
Yeah. Well, moving right along to Peru. You were talking about your experience in Peru and how that started in the marketplace where you live, which is multicultural, to say the least. And I found it fascinating, and I'd love for you to share that again, if you don't mind.
Okay. So that project started... That was a commission for 10 days to look at how people in my local markets were using roots and herbs specifically.
Uh-huh.
And I've been shopping there for 15 years, but I hadn't made... I just bought the regular things that I bought. So I started talking to people about the plants that they were selling.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that many of the different cultures in the markets didn't know what the other folk were selling. And there were lots of things that I wasn't aware of. So I transcribed 10 of the interviews onto brown paper bags and redistributed 100,000 of those back to the traders in the market so that the knowledge that I'd learned about all these different plants was being redistributed.
How did you do that? I mean, I'm just from a practical sense. Where did you get the money to print 100,000 paper bags?
Okay, this was a brilliant thing where the British system, you know, everyone complains.
Right,
everyone complains about being an artist and it's tough and all the rest of it. Yeah. And that's true. But basically, one of the local publicly funded galleries called the South London Gallery had some money to involve the community in a project.
Mm-hmm.
And they left it very, very open and employed me to do these 10 days.
Okay, great.
And then they were really interested in what came up. And then I proposed, I want to redistribute that knowledge back where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And so I proposed the brown paper bags and they sorted that out.
Well, let me just ask, just from a... pragmatic, which is the least of what we're talking about here, I think, in a sense. But so you got 100,000 paper bags out there with information on it. What do you think came out of that?
I think, well, it was really interesting distributing them because the first time I went down with them on a trolley for free, I'm going around and those traders get approached all the time by people who want to sell them stuff. Uh-huh. So they were quite resistant initially and quite suspicious of me giving something for free.
Yeah.
And then... The printing as well is just gold onto the brown paper, so it's quite difficult to
ignore.
See,
it was hard to see. Really,
it's quite subtle because it's gold on brown.
Okay.
Anyway, I started explaining, and then the traders got really into it, and then they started explaining to everybody who was buying the fruit and veg, who I was and what the project was and what was on the bags. And
so you really facilitated communication across cultures.
Yeah, and yeah. It was really interesting as well that the Peruvian and Colombian community that I gave the bags to, they really saw that project with a kind of the revolutionary kind of, oh, this is about the people and communicating mm-hmm. with the people, which I thought was interesting just culturally that mm-hmm. they really picked that up because mm-hmm. I see the South American, maybe it's Che Guevara or something,
right,
it's kind of stirred up that sense of,
yes, that is interesting culturally
community.
That's interesting.
But they were really into it. And then there was a stall that I was filming. I made a film connected to that project. And they were Ugandan Asians. And they were my real figureheads for this mm-hmm. project. And they knew lots of other people.
So all right. So how'd you get in Peru?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
From Uganda.
So one of those guys in the markets had told me about this plant called uña de gato, which means cat's claw. Mm-hmm. And it's this incredible plant that grows as a parasite on the trees in the rainforest, and it's going to save us all from AIDS and cancer and liver disease and every illness going, that plant's going to save us from.
All
it.
We have to do is tear down the rainforest to get
right.
it. Okay, good.
So I couldn't trade-off. Really communicate well with him because my Spanish was really bad.
Yeah.
So I thought the best thing to do was just go to Peru and find out for myself how that plant.
Okay, now here's another one of those wonderful moments, okay? You know, most people, like, you know, plan their vacations and go to some stupid place. And you decided you wanted to go to Peru, right? Okay. Interesting, I think.
Yeah.
And you pulled it off.
I pulled it off. There were two plants, actually. The other one is called the Rose of Jericho, and mm-hmm. that one grows in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. So I also, prior to going to Peru, I'd spent 3 weeks in Palestine and the Middle East as well.
Wow.
So Peru was coming subsequent mm-hmm. to that. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of practiced a bit mm-hmm. in the plant.
So again, I mean, just from a an operational standpoint, you know, not that's important, terribly important to this whole context, but how'd you do it? Was it, again, a funding issue?
With that one, I'd been approached by a gallery in Liverpool called FACT, which is mm-hmm. Foundation for Art and Creative Technologies, and given a solo show there, which was, like, biggest opportunity mm-hmm. to show that I've ever had. And again, they're a public funded space, but I knew that I was going to have a show, so I just had to propose to them what did I want to do.
Okay.
So my proposal was, following on from this plant project in my local markets and having been really fascinated in the local community, was to take that, because I had this great big opportunity, okay, how big an opportunity can I make this?
And you also couldn't find out much about cat paw in, because I don't speak Spanish, so I don't remember what you called it.
Un alligato.
Un alligato. And so you decided to actually go to Peru and find this. Is that right?
Yeah. I got on the plane and went off to this artist space in Barranco in Lima.
Right.
Which, again, the International Artists Network just looks after you so really? Brilliantly.
Nice.
Got there and then made these connections to people that are importing and exporting the uña de gato. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that got me up into the rainforest to
What was that like?
See it. Completely incredible. So to begin with, the first trip, I didn't really know what I was getting into. We had to fly to a town in near the rainforest. Now I've forgotten its name. Pack all my things into a tiny, tiny bag.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it was about batteries and tapes, and I just had hardly anything. And we travelled then, really beautiful journey, for half a day and a night along the one of the tributaries of the
Amazon. Sounds like the movie African Queen with Humphrey Bogart and Catherine Hepburn.
A bit less dramatic. It was very beautiful lying on the roof as the sun went down, and then the fireflies came, and there was
really
amazing night sky uh-huh. far above, and then this kind of secondary night sky, which
were you filming any of
this? Fireflies. No, I filmed on board the boat in the daylight, but just by night time, I was just blissful.
Okay.
Then when I got there, it was much more difficult in a way, and I was hiking around, wading through rivers in my wellies, following.
For those of you who don't know what wellies are,
Wellington boots.
Boots, rubber boots.
Yeah, with the guys macheteing the bits of the forest out of the way, and I'm just running along behind them
with a camera.
With the camera,
In a rainforest. In your rubber boots.
Yes.
Okay, I got it. So did you find this plant?
Yeah.
You did?
The first trip, we found it, and it was being managed because that's how they they look after it and then export it. So those examples were very small. So I went a second time to try and get to a more untouched
forest. Did you try the plant? Have you eaten it?
I've eaten it in the form that they sell it. So that one is this alcohol that they call gasolina, which really is 49% or 43% alcohol, and they sell it in water bottles. Or
gasolina.
In one of the shops,
at gas stations, right?
They sell it in, they put it in those metal containers that
look like
like military gas containers. I saw a kid lugging one into the shop, getting it filled up out of this barrel.
Wow.
That was in Satipo, which is like a rubber and coffee town.
And this is made out of the same thing?
And this is made, and it's bitter. This plant's bitter. They use the bark of it. And they also make sweets out of it. And I met this fantastic guy called Johnny. And he's really entertaining. And he gets on the buses in Lima, and he does a little speech, and he gives out a leaflet, and then he sells 5 uña de gato sweets for,
which are sort of the Peruvian equivalent to aspirin on steroids or something. That kind of sounds like, right?
Open to your own interpretation. Yeah, right. I should have brought you.
That's great. Yeah, you should have.
They're also selling them out of coca as well, so you can get your kind of cocaine sweets on the buses.
Oh, really? Oh, well, that's awfully handy. Okay. Amazing. Now, how in the world does that tie into Pocahontas, or does it?
Right.
The little princess that saved us all and let us end up living in cul-de-sacs and
or trailer parks.
Or trailer parks, depending on your lineage.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It's come about by a different route. It's still a publicly funded commission from Britain, and I was asked to respond to the 400-year commemorations between Jamestown this town called Harwich in Essex in Britain.
Why Jamestown in Essex?
Essex is the
so
town
like a
of
sister
Harwich,
city or something? Or?
No, but interestingly, Chief Anne, who I haven't yet met, so I hope she agrees with what I'm about to say, of the Rappahannock tribe, apparently she sees Essex in Britain as kind of the mother country, because many of the people who first came on the boats, as well as coming from Norfolk, UK, also came from Essex. And the captain, Christopher Newport, who was the captain of the three ships, was baptised in the town of Harwich in Essex. So those people who have a very strong historical society are interested in an artist's viewpoint of the connection between these two places.
Okay.
But it was my proposal to follow Pocahontas because I wanted I didn't want to follow the British bloke captain guy who isn't as well known as the legendary woman of Pocahontas, who, to my mind, and I'm yet to be disproven, however contentious her position is and has been made to be by all the popular cultural portrayals, she was a woman who bridged those two cultures, I think.
Yeah.
Whether she was coerced or whether she did that by her own free will, nonetheless, our view now is that she formed a bridge between the two cultures. So in terms of I'm using her as a guide. I'm here on my own. I'm a woman on my own. So it'd be more fun to come here and be guided around by another woman.
Okay.
So Pocahontas is my guide, let's say.
And the end, what's the end game? Where are you headed? Do you know?
No, in the sense with those plants, I didn't know whether or not, I knew the cat's claw existed there in the rainforest, so I kind of had an end game with that. With this, I'm using her as a guide or a protagonist, but I don't know. I mean, she lived and died within 22
I mean, you
know,
this
years,
is you don't have
so.
This scripted out, and
no.
This is really a journey.
Yeah, and the people I meet are the scripting out. They're scripting.
Is a lot of your work that
me.
Like that?
With
that kind of intuitive sort of yes.
Yeah, I call it calculated chance.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay.
So
yeah, talk about that a little bit, because I've had other people. Certainly, of course, you know, like, you know, the obvious one is in expressionist painting, the drip. You know, there's a drip on your painting. I know, by accident, isn't that amazing? You know, so you're talking about. As a matter of fact, someone I just talked to the other week talked about this, just about opening yourself up to possibilities.
Yeah, you just have to. Yeah, I just try to make myself as receptive as I can be, and yeah. Then I've got a whole stack, like a kind of archaeological set of layers, mm-hmm. Of themes or possible references, and I'm just trying to move around both here and this unfamiliar territory in Britain,
right.
And leave myself open to what comes along and how that might fit into this story of Pocahontas. And the editing process is really where the mm-hmm. work will come together. And where.
So are you trying to create a new understanding of Pocahontas? Are you trying to understand, is it more of a cultural?
Is it? I think I'm using her story to represent contemporary life both here and in Britain, and the similarities and differences in those two
really?
Places. And she's my
uh-huh.
Yeah, she, I don't know how to explain it now. I just think of her as a guide.
Really?
Because there are places named after her. So last Sunday.
But not like in a New Age sense. I mean, you're not speaking to Pocahontas, are you?
Oh, that's a good idea. I should find that.
You should, yeah.
Maybe I should.
Maybe
do
you should
some kind
pursue
of,
that. Yeah.
Are there any shamans around?
I could do it for you, but we're running out of time here. So I do.
Okay.
I do that on the side. So how long are you going to be here?
I'm here until the day after Thanksgiving.
Okay. Well, that works well with Pocahontas. I'm looking at some things that you've said. And this is sort of speaks to what you had said just a minute ago, I think. You said, the beauty of the artistic representation is that it does not require factual accuracy, but can reveal different forms of the truth and knowledge. Can you explain that? Well, can you explain
yeah,
that in
so
like less than 3 hours?
You know, this historical society in Harwich that are part of the commissioning process for this project, through that I've met various historians and academics who follow, and equally the botanists with the plant
right.
project. They have to qualify what they do through fact and
right.
backed up quotes. You've done a PhD,
sure,
you must
right,
know
right.
what that means.
Right.
Right.
I know exactly
and
what you're
I
saying.
Feel as though mm-hmm. there's a huge amount of knowledge that's held by everyday people
right.
that is equally valid and very revealing of people's opinion and mm-hmm. cultural standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in colloquially spoken
right.
information.
Okay. In research, it's called the difference between quantitative and qualitative. And I don't know if you know that or not, but
okay.
yeah, that's what you're doing qualitative research.
The way yeah. that the camera works as well, I find really interesting where when I'm framing and looking through the viewfinder, that brings me closer to and further from the subject that I'm looking at. So
right.
it focuses my mm-hmm. attention mm-hmm. completely.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm shooting on film, it's like every frame that pulls through 25 frames a second
right.
is I'm asking 25 questions, mm-hmm. like one per frame of the... Mm-hmm. celluloid when it's with film. When it's with video, it is a different experience. But there's this engagement detachment thing that
yeah.
happens all the time, and they're flipping
yeah.
round
yeah. Interesting.
As I'm shooting. So
yeah. We could talk for hours, but unfortunately we're out of time. So, well, I want to thank you, Anna
thank
Lucas,
you.
For coming. Let's see, websites. Is there any way they can see your work? Is there something that's...
I don't have my own website.
Yeah.
Because I'm too busy traveling
right.
around
okay.
having fun meeting yeah. real people.
Eat your heart out, folks.
The plant show was called Here and You're Here
mm-hmm.
at FACT in Liverpool. And if you Google me
it?
And ignore the Hawaiian bikini fashion woman
okay.
and Google my name,
right.
then...
Okay, then so there's two Anna, there's at least two Anna Lucases out there, so you can Google Anna Lucas. But anyway, thank you all for listening. We hope to see you again on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And once again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.